Hello, friends. This is Nathan Powell. I co-host a brand new podcast called Dynasty Double Take with Dan Sanyo. We join the DLF family of podcasts with unique Dynasty arguments in a short 10 to 12 minute format. Dan and I love to debate Dynasty, and we hope you enjoy our banter as we discuss topics like trade offers, coaching, draft capital, and much, much more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Trade Addicts Podcast, where the first step is admitting you have a problem. Please welcome your hosts for today's session, Dynasty Outhouse and Brian Hart.
I am Dynasty Outhouse, and I have a trading problem.
And I'm Brian Haar, and I also have a trading problem.
And I am Scott Connor, and I definitely have a trading problem and a lot of other problems.
It's true. He has duct tape on his headphones. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Big 5-0, Session 50 of the Trade Addicts Podcast, a member of the DLF family of podcasts. Legitimately never thought we would actually make it to 50 episodes. I really thought I'd get tired of you by now, Brian. Impossible. Well, that's a lie. I didn't know we would. I figured I would just have replaced you by now.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised I'm still here too, so it's all good.
Yeah, but you keep coming back. I don't know why.
I can't get enough, man.
Well, today is the first day of quote unquote legal tampering of free agency, even though there's been a couple of contracts agreed to in the past month. So I don't know why they bother with this crap anymore. But when I asked for questions, everyone's question was about free agency. So we're going to talk about free agency. And our guest today came up with a couple of ideas for our main event. So we'll go over those because nothing that great happened in free agency so far. And I'm saying free agency a lot. So I'm going to stop talking about it for a little bit. Let's introduce our guest, even though I said his name and he said his name. Scott Connor, say hello to everybody.
Hello to the Trade Addicts audience. I'm glad to be here. And I think a disclaimer that we should add for this show is that this is only Monday night. So the official tampering period hasn't ended yet. So some of the stuff we talk about, you never know. It might change or things may go in a different direction in the next couple of days. So just keep that in mind when you're listening back.
Well, Frank Gore signed, so he can't pull a Frank Gore like he did a few years ago. All right. But before we actually get to that, let's get to know you a little bit. First, why don't you tell the fine people out there who you are, where they can find you, and what you do?
So my name is Scott Connor, and you can find me typically in a couple different places. I'm always on Twitter, mostly just retweeting some of the great content from everybody out there in the Twitterverse. You can also find me at Dynasty Command Center. I'm one of the analysts at Dynasty Command Center and one of the co-hosts of the Dynasty Command Center podcast. And typically what I'm doing is a couple different things. I'm basically just answering questions on their Slack chat all day, taking direct messages and going over with people on building their rosters, trade ideas, pretty much you name it, just general discussion about Dynasty. We have a community of about 200 people over there, and we have some great people that are working over there with us. So that's typically where you can find me. And then also you can find me playing. I'm on the ground floor playing Dynasty Leagues. I played in over 50 Dynasty Leagues last year and plan to cut it back just a little bit, but I think I'm at 44 right now. So that's typically where you can find me in those three places.
All right. I zoned out. Did you actually say your Twitter handle?
Yes, my Twitter handle is CharlesChillFFB. So it's strange because it's not anything to do with my name. But again, I'll repeat it, CharlesChillFFB. So give me a follow if you want.
True. And you also know he cares because we've answered his questions on the show before.
Absolutely. Listen to every episode. So I'm really glad to actually have my own episode. So thanks for having me.
Rock and or roll. Let's get started. How long have you been playing fantasy football?
So I've been playing fantasy football. I think I did my first league in 1998, and that would have been my freshman year of high school. And I can't even remember really any specifics of it. I can barely remember how fantasy was played back then because it's been so long. But that's when I started playing, and I really started getting into it a little bit more, probably beginning of college. I started playing in more redraft leagues. It was still your standard. There was no such thing really as PPR back then. So it was just your standard redraft leagues. And then also started playing in a couple salary cap leagues. I had a long time salary cap league that I played in with a friend of mine for about 4 or 5 years. And we did all the scoring on paper because it was too cumbersome to try to do it, you know, anywhere else. And there wasn't an online platform that kept track of it like we have today. So that was kind of my first foray into anything different other than just your standard redraft league.
All right, so you're old. That's good to know. How long have you been playing Dynasty?
Been playing Dynasty since 2014 was the first real Dynasty league that I got into. And to be honest with you, I can't even really remember what got me into it. I think it started as a older league that I had been in that morphed from a keeper league into a Dynasty league. And then 2015 really is when I started to explode when it comes to Dynasty leagues. And I started joining, you know, at least one a month or so during that summer before the 2015 season. And then it just grows. It's obviously an addiction. It just keeps growing and growing. It's hard to say no to a new league, especially when you have more people that you meet, more people want you to join their leagues. And, you know, it just keeps going. It's never ending.
Yeah, I don't think I've actually met a person yet who just, you know, no, I joined a league and that was good for me. Yeah, I only needed that one Dynasty league. I don't get it. I wouldn't understand that person. I would be afraid of them. Yeah. I fear difference.
I can't imagine the tilting that you would have if you only had one league having to follow your players on Sunday. You know, you have an injury or you have somebody that's not playing. I couldn't imagine only having one league. It would drive me crazy.
Yeah, especially if it wasn't an active league. Like if all you had was a home league, my home league's awful. And I could say that because none of them actually listen to this.
Probably should all start right. listening.
I'm fine without them listening. So you've been playing for a while, and I know you're a trader. Why don't you give us some of your good and some of your bad?
Well, I guess I'll start with the bad. And it was an orphan team that I took over at the beginning of, actually at the end of the 2017 season. I took it over probably about 10 weeks in. The owner had abandoned the team, and someone came to me and said, hey, you take over this team. And of course, they said, they don't have any first round picks for the next 2 years. So that put me behind the eight ball. And I made a bunch of moves, acquired a bunch of second, third round draft picks, and just flipped as many players as I could. And I got to a point where I thought maybe I can contend before last season. And it was completely wrong. I ended up thinking, oh, I need a running back. I flipped Royce Freeman and I gave up Will Fuller and Anthony Miller. And I got Royce Freeman thinking, no, I'm going to have a starting running back. And I kept talking myself into thinking that Miller and Fuller were already overvalued. So I made that flip, and now I'm kicking myself because I'm really just trying to build behind wide receivers in that league and looking forward to the 2020 draft. But that move probably set me back, maybe not a full draft, but it probably set me back maybe half a year to a year in terms of the rebuild. So I'd say that was the worst trade that I've made.
Yeah, that's a little rough, though. I can't fault you for Royce Freeman love. I was all in on that dude. Haven't gotten rid of any of my shares, I don't think. Who the hell knows at this point? But yeah, that sucks, man. All right, well, you got the bad out of the way. Let's hear some of the good.
The good, so this is one that, actually, I'll give you two, but this one, it's a culmination of two trades. Last year, I ended up trading before the season. I traded Drew Brees. It's a 14-team super flex league. I traded Drew Brees for pick 107 to a team that was desperate for a quarterback and ended up drafting Lamar Jackson. And that actually was a win down the stretch. And Jackson performed a lot better than Brees near the playoffs in that league.
That, I also, you know, had like the 10 year age difference.
Yep. So it was a good
that's more than that. There. God, Brees is old.
Quarterback. I also had Le'Veon Bell, and on a whim, everyone in the league thought I undersold Le'Veon when I did, but I sold him at the height of Jerick McKinnon's value spike last year. I sold him for McKinnon and pick 106, which ended up being Nick Chubb.
Oof.
Nice. And then I ended up flipping McKinnon and Matt Breida and a second rounder to get Joe Mixon. So
wow.
Basically three trades ended up being, you know, Lamar Jackson, Nick Chubb, Joe Mixon, and I ended up winning that league. So it was all, you know, avoided the Bell holdout and the McKinnon injury, and then also flipped the quarterback into someone that was better. So I think those combination of actually was three trades ended up winning me the league. And that was one of my higher stakes leagues.
Higher stakes leagues. Oh man, I'm glad I'm out of that, but there was an important lesson in there. More trades make things better.
Yep.
Speaking of, what is a guiding principle you take with you whenever you're evaluating or offering a trade?
So I think that one of the things that's missing from most players or dynasty players' repertoire when it comes to trades is not necessarily, we're past the point where you can't find whether the trade is good or bad for the most part. You know, you can go to Twitter, you can look on different places to find trade advice.
But I tweet think at Dynasty Outhouse, at Brian Haar FF, or at Trade Addicts Pod.
Yep, that. But I mean, you can, it's not that hard to get the consensus on a trade that you're about to make. I know there's quite a few people that I play in leagues with where I know for sure they're going and putting the trades into Twitter before they're making them, just to kind of see what side everybody thinks there's on. And then, you know, people are using trade calculators and whatnot. But I think what gets lost is more of the pre-work before you go into the trade, understanding what your league is all about, understanding your starting lineups, understanding the roster depth, understanding how many players you have in a lineup versus how many players are on a roster. And I think that helps give a better guide in terms of how valuable are, say, late round draft picks, or how valuable is it to be able to free up a roster spot on your team. In a shallow league, you know, you free up a roster spot, that's worth a lot more because you're going to be able to replace it with conceivably a higher valued player. So I think understanding that before you go and make a trade is very important, because you have, you know, a deep league where you might be looking to make a 2-for-1 deal. And in a shallow league, you may be looking to give up a lot more just to get the one starter. So I think understanding that and then exploiting that based on your league is where there's some improvement that could be made for most owners.
See, I love that, because that seems so elementary, but even last week when we were talking about Trade Addicts Trade with Mike, he had no idea that our league had return yardage points, and he was in the league for last year. So, I mean, something as simple as know the damn scoring, people. Along with, yeah, you know, it's a great point that roster spots actually have value. And it's like why we ask for all detail possible when you're posting a trade poll, because whether it's a 12 team, 14, 10 team, there's a couple of 8 team polls going around. That matters a lot. It's because it matters who you go for, how many you have to start, and what a spot on your team is actually worth. So, and that's actually, I think that's the first time that's really been someone's principle. So good one. I appreciate that one.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. Well, let's just do it. Let's get to the news, Brian.
The news.
So free agency started, and before the legal tampering, I guess it didn't even matter. You didn't need legal tampering for this first one. Carlos Hyde was signed to the Chiefs. Now, this is a very big deal because everyone's been flipping the hell out about what to do with Damian Williams. And of course, the Chiefs signed Carlos Hyde, and nobody still knows what they should be doing with Damian Williams. So you're our guest, Scott. What do you think about this backfield right now?
Well, it's interesting because I think the narrative out there, at least from what I've seen, is that this is a hindrance to Damian Williams. And I've actually always been a Carlos Hyde fan. I was hoping that he landed in a spot where he may have a little bit better of a chance to be a three down back. I don't know if I see that in Kansas City, but you can argue that it's a decent landing spot for Hyde. But the stance that I've taken on this specific move is I think this is a great thing for Damian Williams. And I'm taking that stance basically because of what he showed last year when he got the opportunity in the second half of the season. But I think it kind of shows that by going after somebody like Hyde and doing it before the free agency period, I'm not quite sure that the Chiefs are really going to invest a whole lot at the position in the draft. I mean, I know typically I think it's like 75% of teams end up drafting a running back during the draft, but it really matters with a running back when they get taken. If it's a round 5 or round 6 pick, I'm not really worried about that impacting these two guys. So I think if you're just looking at Williams versus Hyde, I'm still on the Williams side. And if I can sell Hyde to the Williams owner, I'm looking to do that rather than trying to buy. The only time I'd really try to buy buy Hyde would be if there's a team that I have Williams and maybe it's a point per carry league, I may consider pairing those two together because they may have a chance to be both startable in given weeks. But other than that, I'm still on the Williams side, still buying, hopefully at a little bit of a discount from what he was costing a couple weeks ago, and still selling Hyde if somebody thinks that he's going to be one that takes over.
What are you hoping to get for Hyde?
I think if I could get, obviously hoping to get more than I could have a week ago, but I would probably sell for, I'd say on the low end, any second round pick. It can even be a second rounder in this year's draft. Probably would prefer to get a 2020 second, especially if it's a super flex or a point per carry league, only because I think the depth at quarterback and running back is going to probably push those second round picks to be a little bit more valuable. But I'd probably take any second rounder, but obviously shoot for the highest one that you can get.
Rockin'. All right, Brian, thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree on this one. I think, you know, anytime a running back is brought in to compete, especially one that has had success in the past, like Carlos Hyde has, you know, then, yeah, people get concerned. Well, what does this mean? Is he going to come in and take the carries away? Is he going to get the opportunities? I don't think, I mean, the biggest thing here for me is Damian Williams, where he really made his mark was in the passing game. He had, I believe, 24 receptions in the five games that he started, the three at the end of the season, and then the two playoff games that they were in. He had 24 catches in those five games. And he was only, he was targeted like 26 times. So when he was targeted, he was catching the football. And these yardage totals are, you know, fairly impressive too. He had 16, which I guess isn't all that great, but 74, 37. He had a dud in 8. And then he had 25 and 66 yards receiving in the two playoff games. So I don't think that, Carlos Hyde is an above average receiving back, but that's not his forte. I think Damian Williams is going to be that guy. He's going to be the guy that's catching the passes, and that offense throws to the backs enough that he's going to, you know, he's going to hold value. Even if Carlos Hyde takes some of the rushing work away, which, you know, I don't know that that's a given either. I mean, we really haven't seen Hyde run since the sixth week of the season last year. So, you know, we'll see what happens with this thing. But I agree. I don't think it necessarily affects Williams as negatively as, you know, if they were to draft a running back, you know, and especially if they spent some capital on it, you know, if it was a first couple rounds, first three rounds, four rounds, something like that. I would be more concerned about that, I think, than I would. I am about Hyde. So,
yeah. See, I guess I'm a little higher on Hyde than you guys are. I'm a decent fan of Hyde. I am also just not a fan of Williams. I get that he showed last season, but he was really bad up until that point. And I feel like talent might show out. We have seen Hyde be an every down back, and of course, it was in a Shanahan system, and we've seen that everyone could look good in a Shanahan system. So while I don't think Hyde walks in and steals, what, like a 70% market share? Like, I don't think he's becoming a workhorse by any means. But I still think he's going to... If you had dreams of Damian Williams being a workhorse, I think that's gone. I think this is the best case scenario for him. They got someone cheap that isn't, you know, a stud of any sorts. They didn't, like you said, put any draft or money capital into this guy. Like, he was pretty cheap. So I think they're both going to be valuable. I don't think they'll be as valuable as one of them by themselves would be, clearly. Yeah, well, I think go ahead, man.
I was gonna say another thing. I think we're guilty also of maybe double counting this move against Damian Williams' value, because his value had settled right around, you know, maybe a mid to late first round pick prior to this news. But I don't think anybody was ever under the impression that the Chiefs are just not going to bring anybody in, and they're just going to roll with Damian Williams as their only running back. So it was really, we were just waiting for this shoe to drop. And if the shoe drops again and it's a third round rookie running back, then I'm worried for all of their values. But the first move came and it was Carlos Hyde. So I guess I'm kind of looking at that as, that was already digging his value. If we knew he was going to be the only running back and they were going to bring in nobody else, then his value probably would have been up near the top of the first round versus at the bottom end. So I'm kind of looking at this as, this shouldn't change his value at all, in my opinion. You knew they were going to bring somebody in, and especially with a lot of the veteran free agents at the running back position, you knew they were going to bring somebody in. Now it's just a matter of, do they bring anybody else in? That will be the big move to determine if this is a good or a bad thing for either of these guys.
Yeah, it's something that I think I'm not a fan of getting both guys in a backfield. Like last year, I wasn't a fan of getting Jamal Williams and Darren Jones. I'm a plant your flag kind of guy. I think if I'm planting a flag in this one, it's going to be on Hyde.
Okay.
And it sounds like you guys are planting on Damian. So see who's wrong. You guys are. That was not intimidating whatsoever. Let's move on. Oh, Mr. Big Checks. All right. Well, we're going to keep this as fantasy football relevant as possible. Antonio Brown has signed with the Oakland Raiders. Well, was traded to the Oakland Raiders. We've been valuing Juju and James Washington to this point as if this was happening anyway. So I feel like zero changes with them. But what does this do to... I mean, the only thing that had value in Oakland was somewhat Derek Carr. I mean, Jared Cook is a free agent at this point, and there was, I mean, the corpse of Jordy Nelson at this point. So what does this do to Antonio Brown for you? I mean, this has to be a good thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there was any place that Antonio Brown could go where his value is going to go up. But I think this was probably one of the softer landing spots for him, to where the biggest question for me is not necessarily going to be how he performs on the field, because I think it's a downgrade in situation. I don't think there was a situation, you know, shy of him going to Indianapolis or Green Bay or Kansas City or something like that. I don't see there would be in a situation where it actually would have gone up. But I still think that it's a situation where Brown is going to be the center of the offense. And I think that Raiders are in a position where they may look to make a statement with the acquisition of Antonio Brown. So I don't necessarily think it's going to hurt him from an efficiency standpoint, but I can definitely say that the volume is going to go down going to Oakland, just because I don't see a way that it can go anywhere but down from leaving Pittsburgh. But the most interesting thing to me is just the way that Antonio Brown played this situation. I think he played it completely brilliantly from a standpoint of, he essentially whined his way out of town and kind of screwed the Steelers at the same time, and then got a new contract. So I'm kind of curious to see how he fits in, how he's portrayed by a lot of dynasty owners, because there's already a lot of dynasty owners that were not a big fan of him to begin with. So it'll be interesting to see how this impacts him, and also how long does he stay happy. You know, he got everything he wanted. How long does that last?
Yeah, when the Raiders start like 1-5, we'll see how well he can actually handle being on that much of a losing team. But again, we're going to keep this as fantasy football related as possible. His value's down. There's no two ways about it. Let's say you had, do you have an Antonio Brown share?
I have a couple, yeah. But I pretty much have every player. So, yeah, I have a couple.
That's true. If you're on 30-something teams, you probably have one of someone. Yeah. What would it take for me to get him off your team right now?
If I was looking to move him, I think when you're looking at those older receivers, you know, Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, A.J. Green, you're looking at those guys, it definitely has to be team-specific. I'm probably not trading them on a team where I'm a prime contender. But if I have a team that's maybe potentially a contender, I'd probably be looking for – I don't want to trade him specifically for draft picks, and I probably don't want to trade him for completely unproven receivers. So I would probably be looking to get maybe like a DJ Moore plus for him, maybe another younger receiver that I can see maybe replacing his production in a year or two. Or getting close to it. Kind of like one of those 80% moves where I think I can get 80% of what Brown's going to give me. And then if I can get more than 20% out of the other piece, then I'm going to end up winning the deal. So that's what I'd probably be looking for. I think DJ Moore would be somebody I'd target. Cooper Kupp would be somebody else that I target. Mike Williams, kind of anybody in that like low wide receiver two, high wide receiver three tier.
So we're talking like an early first and a value player of like a mid-low second on top to probably get you there.
Yeah, and I think it depends on the format, too. If we're talking about, again, if we're talking about a deeper draft league, so anything where you add premiums, running back, point per carry, tight end premium, super flex, the draft gets expanded. So I would be a little bit more flexible in terms of the type of draft pick compensation that I would take there. So I'd be thinking like a DJ Moore in a early to mid first round pick. It's kind of where I would maybe start and, you know, kind of see how high I can go from there.
Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, you know what that sounds like to me is Nick Chubb, Russ.
Is that an offer?
Yeah.
Is that what that is?
Yeah. It's the same offer.
Step back, buddy.
I've been trying to sell Antonio Brown for Nick Chubb in one of the leagues that Russ and I are in together to him, trying to sell Antonio Brown to him for like a couple of months. So No, I mean, I agree with what's been said here. I think, you know, his value is probably down a little bit, but it isn't, I don't think, as bad a situation as it could have been. You know, if he'd accepted the trade to Buffalo, you know, or not shut that down, you know, that's a much worse situation, in my opinion. You know, and we'll see what this does. I mean, it has ripple effect too on some other players, especially in Oakland. You know, Derek Carr, who I don't think a lot of people were super high on as a quarterback.
Very, very, very nice.
Yeah, I mean, obviously has value in super flex leagues, but people don't, you know, he's not a quarterback that I don't think a lot of people target. You know, I mean, I think this gives him a little bit of a boost, you know. Now, how much of a boost? I don't know. He's still got to hit Brown with the ball, you know, and whatnot. But, you know, he has a true number one star wide receiver on his team now to throw to. So, you know, I can't see it being a worse situation than it was last year, where he didn't really have anybody to throw the ball to.
All right. Well, first of all, how dare you from every single Amari truther out there?
Burn.
Well, I didn't. It was an unintentional burn to Amari. I mean, Amari Cooper to me is a Cowboy.
It's so just the same.
It was half a season. Yeah. So, but no, I mean, I think, you know, for Brown, you know, we'll see what it does. I mean, I don't think it's going to take him long to get frustrated. The difference here too, we'll see. I mean, John Gruden isn't the type of guy that I feel like takes a lot of crap. So we'll see what happens. I mean, if they can keep him happy and he's producing, good for him. He'll extend his career in Oakland, get to reinvent himself again, maybe stain his mustache silver or something, or actually it'll start turning gray because he's getting older, you know. It happens. So, you know, that'll be perfect. But, you know, we'll see what happens with it. I'm very intrigued to see what he does in Oakland. And obviously, I mean, it's documented. I'm a Steelers fan, so this it's going to be very interesting to me to see how this works out. Just overall. But yeah, that's me. That's me keeping it to fantasy football much as I can.
Well, before last season, we were sort of rational, you know, us Amari people were rationalizing Gruden loves to feed his number one wide receiver. In which case,
Joe Giravicious.
In Tampa. Speak English on this podcast.
Joe Giravicious.
No, I know. It's just
you know where he went? Hey, where'd he go to school, buddy?
Penn State. Rutgers?
Penn State.
Yeah. I know. So, again, and Antonio Brown is good. It's not that he was just being a jerk, which clearly, but the dude's good. Good people get open. Good people get the ball. Even if Carr's not great, he'll still find a way to get him the ball a decent amount. The only thing I'm worried about is volume in general as a team, passing volume. Gruden does like to run the ball. If my Chris Warren shares mean anything to me, I kind of hope they run the ball a decent amount.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, this is good for everybody on that team. Good players bring good things. Good fantasy production comes from good offenses, and hopefully this turns them into a good offense. So, Mr. Big Checks. No, I'm not saying that again.
Scott,
right, let's move on.
I just have a real quick question. Scott, do you think that this will help? I mean, obviously, Jordy Nelson's getting up there too, but do you think this will help him be a good complementary? You know, he's a really good route runner, and now he's going to be going against team second corners. I mean, do you think if he can stay healthy, he has some value in the short term? I mean, obviously, again, long term, he's getting up there, but do you think this will help his situation?
Yeah, I actually think Jordy Nelson is a little bit undervalued if you're looking at a win now team right now. I know there's still a question on, you know, what his future is going to be with Oakland, but at least for one more season, I think he's good for probably somebody that can help you maybe in a flex spot next season. And I'm curious to see if, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm curious to see if they really increase the routes that he runs from the slot. I think that's a way that he can extend his career a little longer than where he's at right now. So I think that there's a world where you should buy Jordy Nelson if you're a win now team, and maybe one of those teams that's trying to buy someone like Larry Fitzgerald, same principle, but you can probably get it a little cheaper because the role isn't as established or as improving. So I definitely think that there's a place where you could acquire Jordy Nelson and he can be a useful player even at his age.
I legit don't think I own a share of Jordy Nelson.
If I think I'm on a buying spree, Russ.
Yeah, yeah, man.
That's what I'm doing tomorrow, apparently. All right. So we were talking about this before we started recording. I was crying about Jameson Crowder going to the Jets because I have been buying Quincy and Nunua like a madman this offseason. Make me feel better, Scott.
So I agree with you. I've been buying Nunua where I can, especially after he signed that contract extension early January. I'm thinking that's his role locked down. And then all of a sudden I get the blurb today that they're signing Jameson Crowder, who's another player that I've been trying to, you know, low key buy where I can just to hope that he lands in a good landing spot. So now you're tasked with trying to determine, okay, well, how are they going to use both of these two guys together? So I looked into it a little bit more this afternoon, and I found some information back from 2016, which was really the last, I guess you could say it was the last full season that Nunua played without any injuries. And he actually played almost 25% of his snaps in 2016 on the outside. And he was actually a lot more effective on the outside. He actually gained over 2.5 yards per route run on the outside compared to only 1.25 from the slot. And he was actually the best receiver. This is from Pro Football Focus. He was the best receiver out of 78 qualifying receivers in both catch rate and also in receptions more than 20 yards. So when he plays the outside role, he's not, you know, he's not somebody that's slow and big. When you watch him play, you kind of look at him and you say, well, that's definitely a reason that he's playing that big slot role. But if you go back to his prospect profile, he actually ran a 4.45 and was in the 97th percentile in the agility drills. And so it's somebody that has a little bit more than what I think he's shown. And you can maybe attribute that a little bit to health. You know, obviously he missed that 2017 season due to the neck injury, and the plans that year was to play him on the outside more, but he had that injury. And then last year they were kind of forced to play him in the slot more. So I think that he's somebody that's not going to be impacted by Crowder as much as you think. I don't know if this is going to be good overall for all the Jets receivers, just because I have a hard time seeing how they're going to support three receivers and Chris Herndon, especially with the Gase offense, because they have very, very low play counts per game, and also their pace is pretty low. At least in Gase's time with Miami, it was always in the bottom five of the league. So I'm still buying a Nunua, but maybe not as aggressively as I was. But his value's not shot, so I don't think your investment's completely up in smoke.
Yeah, that does make me feel a bit better, especially because, you know, he wasn't that expensive of a player anyway. But no,
I think the one that gets hurt is Herndon here. I think he's been overvalued all offseason. I think this just adds to it. I have a hard time seeing where he's going to be able to get the volume to take any appreciable leap in value from where he is right now. So I think he's the one that suffers the most from this signing.
Yeah, I mean, that sucks. all right, well, we're going to move on a little quicker because we're going to talk about Devin Funchess signing a one-year deal with the Colts, which only makes me sad because there's a certain animal nicknamed player I wanted to sign with the Colts, and I kind of feel like this ruins that. But we'll talk about him a little bit later because I want to talk about him a little bit later. Does anyone care that Devin Funchess signs with the Colts? Does this do anything for anybody?
I love it. I've been buying Funchess the last month as well, kind of the same as a Nunua, and I think this is great news.
You think they'll actually use a third tight end?
See, I gotta push back on that. I think he gets hated. The hate for Funchess is a little bit over the top.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, I'm just having fun. But yeah, I mean, I don't think he's great. I think it's good that he isn't. We don't have to pretend that he's a number one anymore. I think that's great. Probably good for him, for his career.
No, and I think the biggest thing with Funchess is they had four other receivers last year between Zach Pascal, Ryan Grant, Dontrell Inman, Chester Rogers. You know, they had those four guys combined for 209 targets. And they also had two backup tight ends, Eric Swope and Mo Alie-Cox, had five additional touchdowns. So I do think there's there's an argument to be made that if Funchess can get the volume that, say, Dante Moncrief got back in 2015, which was the last season before last year where Luck was fully healthy, Moncrief had 100 targets, 105 targets that year, and he finished as a high-end wide receiver four, low-end wide receiver three. So I think if you combine that, Funchess playing that role, and then also combine the increased volume that the Colts showed last year, I think there's a chance where he can produce maybe at the peak, like low-end wide receiver two, mid wide receiver three numbers.
Interesting.
Yeah, I like it too. I mean, I own, for some reason, I own quite a few shares of Funchess. So this made me pretty happy when I saw it come across the screen. I guess the thing that I'm a little bit shocked about was the number. So it's a one-year deal, but it's $13 million, isn't it?
Something like that.
Yeah, so that shocks me a little bit in terms of just in terms of the money. But I guess if Crowder's getting nine a year, it's, I mean, that's, you know, I don't know, but I like it too. I mean, I think who this hurts, honestly, and you're gonna hate when I say this, Russ, but I think it hurts Ebron. I think it hurts Ebron because they're gonna. Zone. That's where Funchess excels. So, you know, I think there's a possibility that he cuts into some of that, you know, opportunity down close. You know, so but yeah, I'm glad he's gonna get a chance to prove himself, and that's exactly what this is. It's an Alshon Jeffrey type deal. It's a 1 year prove it, you know. So and then we'll see what happens after that. So but yeah, I'm loving it for my Funchess shares. Now, the one thing I would say is if you're not a believer, which there's not, you know, there are some people that not really, many left. Really don't like him, you know, then this is an opportunity to find the people that do think he can bounce back here and move him if you want to, you know.
Take anything you get?
I mean, no, I wouldn't. I mean, in the spots that I have him, I mean, I wouldn't take anything less than a two. I mean,
really?
Why would I? He's going to be the number two receiver in Andrew Luck's offense. Why would I take anything less than a two?
That's what I would buy for. I would buy for a second round pick if I can. And probably the wild card in this is Jack Doyle. He just had hip surgery a couple weeks ago, and that may be the wild card. How he recovers, he's not expected to actually do any football activities until training camp. So if he comes back healthy, I think his health could be a wild card for both Funchess and Ebron. If for some reason he's out of the way or he's unable to play, I think both of them can be trusted. So I would definitely pay a second rounder right now just on the chance that, hey, I get the number two in a Luck offense, like you said.
Russ, let me ask you this. So you kind of really in that situation. So we've talked about James Washington on the show, right? So he is assumed to step into the wide receiver two role in Pittsburgh. Okay. Now that offense obviously shows that they pass the ball a lot, but the situation itself, I mean, Andrew Luck is every bit the quarterback that Ben Roethlisberger is.
Yeah. So, but they, Pittsburgh uses wide receivers more than the Colts do. The Colts' second wide receiver has always been a tight end. I think I said the words right. The wide receiver two on the Colts has always been a tight end. Andrew Luck has never really used two wide receivers. It's always been a wide receiver and a tight end. So the way we look at it, at least this past year, the wide receiver two was the fourth target, and that's not including the games where Hines went nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that point. I understand that point.
Funchess, again, from, but I think whatever I've been saying about Funchess, he's better than anyone else they've had at their wide receiver two spot.
Right. Right. And he's shown and that's the other difference between him and Washington. And I'm not saying that I would take Funchess over Washington per se. I'm just saying, for the sake of argument, you know, the situation is similar, and Funchess has been productive. I mean, albeit it was, you know, mildly productive, and because he was the only receiver on the team in Carolina for a little bit there. So, you know, but I, you know, the similarity there, I guess I'm just pushing back a little on the whys, but I do understand the point, you know, with the tight end usage there too. So we'll see what happens. But
if the Colts volume stays what it is, or what it was, I should say, then Yeah, I think he could easily. I mean, wide receiver three is kind of a floor, right? I mean, so I guess you're. Yeah, I guess I overreacted. I apologize, you guys. Okay, so we're going to skip the next two on the list just to touch on this last one, hopefully pretty quickly. Jesse James signs the tight end, signs to Detroit. Detroit doesn't use their tight ends. I mean, care? No?
Yeah, well, I was still holding out hope, the very, very slimmest of hope that my boy Michael Roberts would turn into something, but that dream's pretty much dead at this
point.
Think,
does anyone know how much money he got? Like, is it like, we're going to use you money?
I didn't see how much he got. I'm curious how it compared to the other tight ends that signed Uzama and Tyler Croft. I'm probably guessing somewhere in that same range, like $6 million a year. Same with Nick Boyle, same kind of deal. I don't know though. I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, because I mean, Jesse James was good when he was the only tight end in town, but he wasn't necessarily anything great. I was on the Michael Roberts train last year, so I kind of hope that becomes a thing also because I still have all those shares.
I think he's a touchdown or bust guy. He's not. Mm-hmm. He doesn't.
I mean, that's
anything.
Most tight ends, right?
Yeah, I think that's kind of where he's going to slide in, right in that like low end tight end two range where he may be able to play him and hope for a touchdown. But yeah, like you said, Detroit doesn't use the tight end, so not really much for this one.
All right, so it's two tight end leagues which we're in together. Which one would you be going after, Jesse James or Michael Roberts?
Well, I think you got to go after Jesse James at this point, but in terms of the value it would probably take to acquire someone like Jesse James today, because I know he's somebody that people have been stashing for the pending free agency for the last couple months. I would just as soon as look for other, you know, week to week plays at tight end position. I don't think it's really that much different. Just look for maybe an injury and then look for who the next man up is and add those kind of guys on my roster if I was weak instead of actually paying in trade value for someone like James.
Truth. All right. So let's get to the important people. Let's get to quarterbacks. Nick Foles officially to the Jaguars. It's a good thing. I mean, anything's better than the Bortz, right?
I mean, I'm encouraged just from somebody that drafted Nick Foles last year thinking that he's going to end up being a starter at some point, and then he ended up re-upping with Philadelphia for another year. So I'm good with that, with him actually having a starting job. But in terms of where he's going to slot in, I think he slots right into that, you know, right into that like Andy Dalton range, maybe right behind like your Derek Carrs in terms of fantasy production. So it really just depends on the league format. Obviously, a deeper super flex league, it's kind of a little bit of a Yahtzee to be able to have him as your, you know, third quarterback that you may have been stashing. But in terms of just dynasty value, I'm looking to sell if I can just to a team that's desperate for a starter, because I really only think he lasts maybe 2 years. But maybe even less, depending on if they draft somebody.
Yeah, so he's like the Bobby Koch special. He's the serviceable quarterback, too.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. I agree with everything you just said. I do still think it's an improvement over Bortles. I have been picking up a lot of D.D. Westbrook lately. I think this is good for him. Foles has used guys like Westbrook's body shape before. He fed into Alshon Jeffery a decent amount. And I think that works well for Westbrook as well. So I'm hoping that works. Not to mention that, I mean, as of now, they don't have a tight end. A lot of mock drafts have them taking somebody. So I'm not really a DJ Chark guy. Keelan Cole, I want to be a thing, but I'm not going to really count on it. So, I mean.
Marquise Lee's coming back too.
That'll be great for 20 minutes. I liked him so much when he came out. How much would you be willing to sell him for? You said you have a share or two you've been holding on to in deeper super flex leagues. I mean, you're obviously, you need a first. I mean, are you willing to take like 108-ish for him, or does it need to be an early first just because he's a starting quarterback in a super flex league?
No, I'd take a 108, especially if it's a league, like you said, that's super flex. And if there's any other premium, that 108 is probably going to end up being, you know, just assuming that Haskins and Murray and, you know, a couple receivers go off the board, you know, I'm probably looking at maybe getting the fourth or fifth receiver and maybe the first or second running back at that spot. So I definitely would think you would sell for a 108, but I don't think you're going to be able to get that. Probably my target would be looking for someone that thinks they're only a quarterback away and seeing if I can get their 2020 first, and just hoping that the first, even if it's a playoff first, that it ends up being on the lower end. So you end up getting the pick in 2020. Cause I definitely think if you're someone that's looking to replenish at quarterback, that's a good draft to get into. So I'd probably be looking more towards 2020, but if you put my feet to the fire, I'd probably take any first rounder for Foles at this point.
All right. Yeah, that's pretty on spot. Did Keenum to the Skins actually happen? I wrote that down, but I don't know if it actually was officially, like, did they agree to the trade for real?
I think they agreed to it, but it can't be official yet until then, especially with the trade.
Right. All right. Well, I already said the words out loud, so let's talk about it. He's clearly going to be their starter because he's better than whatever they've had there. And even if they do draft someone, I think it would be smarter to start Keenum over whatever they'd probably end up with. So, I mean, his value probably doesn't change from what it was last year, right? And it's not like those wide receivers had much going for them in the first place. Does anything really change for you in this situation?
No, I actually think that the Keenum signing is a little bit underrated. I mean, if we just talked about Nick Foles, but to be completely truthful, I don't really see a huge difference between the two, but that's not how you would think it is based on how people would look at the two players side by side in terms of dynasty value. And Keenum was almost pretty much written off, especially after the Flacco acquisition. And now I think he's actually a better fit for a Jay Gruden system than Alex Smith. So I think he does slot right in there into the maybe real high-end quarterback three in a 12-team league. Maybe a fringe starter that you play in a pinch or that you probably have as your third quarterback. I'd definitely be looking to sell him just like I would Foles because I think his leash is going to be even shorter. But if you really made me decide who's different, if there's much difference between Foles and Keenum, I don't really see a huge gap between the two, not at least where they would be valued. I mean, I think that would be something that if you had Foles and you could get Keenum back plus something else, that might not be a bad move.
You know what this really means to me? Now that Crowder's officially gone, I want all of the Trey Quinn.
Yeah,
with
like
what he did with Manny in the slot, I want that slot receiver, and right now that's Trey Quinn.
That is my highest owned dynasty player. I own him in 19 leagues.
Damn. Trey Quinn. Wow, I think my highest owned is only like 6 or 7 leagues. I don't even like going into last season, Austin Eckler was my most owned. And then weirdly enough, Odell Beckham is my most owned player right now, and it's only in 6 leagues. I haven't done a count in a while. I'm going to do that right now while we're recording, and everyone's just going to sit here in silence while I count all of my leagues.
See ya.
Later. Okay. That's not happening. I'm too lazy for that anyway. So Terrell the Gazelle Williams did not sign anywhere yet, and there hasn't even been word of it. And since I love him so much, I want to talk about him anyway. What spots are left for wide receivers at this point? Do we think that someone who was at some point touted as the best wide receiver in this free agent pool for him to go to, is there anything left worthwhile that anyone could think of?
Well, I think right now the place to keep an eye on is Cleveland. So I'm sure you would love to see him paired up with Baker, right?
Oh my God. I have the vapors thinking about it.
That's what it looks like. That looks like who's potentially the favorite in the clubhouse for Tyrell. I haven't seen anything official, at least since I was looking a little bit ago, but that seems to be the favorite landing spot right now. So I think that'd be interesting to see how you would decipher between him and Antonio Callaway, because Callaway has been somebody that I've been selling for this exact reason, is I think it's almost a lock that the Browns with their cap room bring in another either speed or outside receiver, either in free agency or in the draft. So that would be interesting to see how you would balance that with Callaway's value, because I think it's also overinflated right now. And I think if they sign Tyrell Williams, his value would definitely take a big spike up. So I'd be curious to see if that happened, what you would be buying for us.
Well, for Gazelle,
Tyrell the Gazelle.
At this point, he might be my most owned player that I just haven't counted at. I mean, I've been buying him for low seconds pretty much. If he lands in Cleveland, I still don't think I'd be able to. I mean, give me I'll sell the earliest two I have. And if I'm in the draft and don't care what's there at the end of the first, I'd honestly be willing to do it. I get that there's a lot of mouths in Cleveland at this point, but it's so much fun. That offense can be just so good, and Baker likes to chuck the ball at times, and that will be good for a Gazelle who's fast and gigantic. So I love it. I'd buy that jersey. Though I would actually have to get a custom made to say Gazelle on the back. Because Williams is boring. What about you, Brian? Any ideas?
Buffalo's still in the market.
Why do that to me?
Because I can.
Yeah, son of a... It's true.
So he's. I'll tell you the one thing. He's getting paid.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to get paid.
Funches is getting 13.
Yeah. So, good for him. I mean, I like Williams, too. I mean, he's a player. I hope he goes somewhere. I mean, from a personal fan standpoint, I don't want him to go to Cleveland. I'm tired of people going to Cleveland, man.
Wow, Pittsburgh's been so good for so long. Someone's finally going to get better.
But honestly, I mean, from a fantasy standpoint, that would be a fantastic landing spot for him. That would be a guy that I would want to own as much as possible if he ends up landing there. Absolutely. So.
Yeah, and I'm terrible thinking of teams like off the top of my head. I'm kind of struggling to think of where, like, anyone who's been in the market for a wide receiver. San Francisco, that would be kind of baller. Again, this is writing off, the draft in any way, because there's so many wide receivers in this draft that a team that is wide receiver needed probably isn't just going to sign a free agent. They're also going to grab someone in the draft.
Right.
I think Baltimore is another one that may be a landmine along with.
Yeah, that's another don't put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby kind of thing.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. Hopefully they're smart and just go for possession receivers, because that's all they need with Lamar.
Well, and he's a similar player to John Brown, too. Right. I mean, they kind of have they're both more deep threats than.
Yeah.
Going after
Golden Tate is something smarter for Baltimore to do right now than, you know, going after Terrell Williams.
Yes.
And probably be cheaper in the long run, given Golden Tate's age. All right. Well, we are going to. Let's do Brian's Trade Addicts trade. Let's do that first. Trade Addicts trades. Hit me with it, Brian.
Trade Addicts trades.
Trade Addicts leagues, 12 team, super flex, PPR, tight end, premium, little bit of points for return yardage. Trade Addicts 4. We have Cooper Kupp for Chris Godwin and the 312. Anyone listening knows what side Brian's on if they've ever listened to the show before. So, Scott, why don't you let us know what you think of this trade?
Well, I saw this one and it reminded me of a deal that I had done a little while back too. Same exact deal involving Cooper Kupp and Chris Godwin. So I'm unequivocally on the Cooper Kupp side here. I think Chris Godwin, I've said this on multiple shows over the last couple months, that Chris Godwin's value right now is, it's all projection. I mean, he's all the way up there, right on the fringe of wide receiver 2 value in Dynasty. And I think it's just almost all based on projection. And I like Chris Godwin. I was a fan of him coming out of college. I know Brian likes him because he's a Penn State guy, but I think I have to go with the Cooper Kupp side on this, just because I think Godwin's value is already almost at its ceiling, especially if you look at Arians' usage of the second receiver in a offense where there's a target hog receiver like Mike Evans is going to be. So I just don't see the ceiling for Godwin. Now, maybe long-term, it's going to be a win potentially in 2 or 3 years, but it's not like Cooper Kupp is old. So I would take the Cooper Kupp side, and it's not even close.
Sorry, buddy.
No, that's okay.
No, go get your guy. Good for you. We know that's your guy.
Yeah.
I kind of wish you got a better pick coming back to you. That's really about it.
Yeah. I mean, just to give you perspective too. So in this league, so this was Trade Addicts 4. I own Diggs, I own Nuke, I own Thomas, I own Watkins. I had Kupp too.
Give me Diggs.
Make an offer, bro.
I have been. I don't want to give up Diggs.
So when I received this offer, I snap accepted. That's how fast I accepted the deal. I would have liked to get a better pick too, and I probably could have. I think Mike would have probably given me. So this is with Mike, who we had on the show a couple weeks ago. I probably could have pried it out of him. He definitely took advantage of me. He knows me too well. Yeah. but this is one of those deals where I hit accept, and I knew the second I hit accept that I was losing that poll. I mean, it wasn't, there's no doubt in my mind. This is a player, Chris Godwin, that I value higher than the consensus. And his value is, like Scott said, it's already high. It's on that wide receiver two fringe, right? So I value him higher than that, personally, but we'll see. I mean, this is absolutely me getting a guy that I just believe in. So I'm cool with the deal. I understand why people love Cooper Kupp. I don't think that offense, that offense scares me a little from the standpoint that, so this year they sustained three wide receivers at a wide receiver one level, basically, or high end wide receiver two level. When Kupp was in there, I mean, Woods was the wide receiver seven during the time that Kupp was playing. He finished wide receiver 10. Brandon Cooks is up there. So, I mean, you know, and then, of course, Todd Gurley. I just don't know that offense, I mean, did we see the best season that offense is going to put together? I don't know. I mean, maybe not. Hopefully not. I mean, I love watching them play, and I have a ton of Jared Goff, so I hope that's not the absolute ceiling for that offense. I just don't want to get into a situation where I don't know which one of those receivers is going to be the, you know, if it isn't so balanced like it has been so far, and it absolutely has been. So, you know, I understand, but if it's not as balanced and they end up not spreading it out as much, then, you know, I don't know. For me, I want Godwin everywhere I can get him. And this was a guy, Kupp is a guy coming off an ACL that I felt like I could part with to get him. So that's why I did it. But again, I understand the value probably wasn't enough in terms of the way everybody thinks about Cooper Kupp. And that's okay with me.
All right. I'm going to give you the two sides to Cooper Kupp right now. Selling him now is, if you wanted to sell him, selling him now is a little smart, because we have been saying we're going to assume he's coming back and he's going to end up with some soft tissue injuries, because that's what happens to anyone that comes back with an ACL. So my goal is to buy the first few weeks of the season, because people are going to get pissed off. So selling him now, when everyone's still starry-eyed about him, is a good move. And then two, you're going to get the people that are going to argue with your last thing of, is this the best we've seen, was that offense was better with Cooper Kupp in it. I mean, whether that's going to maintain or not, I'm just letting you know what I'm sure people are yelling at the whatever they're listening on right now.
I think another good point that you make is that even though I take the Kupp side in this trade, I would immediately then look to flip Cooper Kupp, because there is always, at least from what I've seen, there is always a stone cold truther in your league for Cooper Kupp that's going to value him even higher than where he's valued right now. I've seen multiple polls where he's right there neck and neck with Brandon Cooks in terms of the most valuable Rams receiver. So I would turn around and try to sell Kupp just because what you mentioned, you know, they all performed at that wide receiver one, wide receiver two level. And I don't think that's sustainable. And I also think both Gerald Everett and Josh Reynolds are good players. That they may not be fantasy relevant, but I don't see a way that they are just completely phased out of the offense for another year. So I definitely think there's a downturn for these Rams receivers. So I would try to sell Kupp and turn around and get a player that I like even better. But I, you know, kind of look at it as like I'm winning on the Godwin Kupp side, and then I'm turning around and try to win again, swapping Kupp for somebody that I like better, like a DJ Moore or a T.Y. Hilton or someone like that.
I have like a tear rolling down my cheek. That little thing made me so proud. Keep flipping. So we have been saying our Patreon is filled with awesome, awesome perks, one of which is our Cool Kids Club group chat, which one of the perks is being able to watch us live on YouTube. And I keep the chat open because that's just what I do. I read things on the computer, and that's why I zone out whenever Brian talks, because I'm just looking at Twitter and everything. So you're in the chat. I'm looking at the chat while we're recording. You can see what I'm talking about. You can ask questions. I'm going to answer a question from the Cool Kids Club right now. Our boy Rob wants to know the value of Vance McDonald. And just to be a jerk, he said, what about Terrell the Gazelle to Miami? Now, I thought about this, and the reason I said I didn't say Miami is because, man, they're blowing everything up. It would seem silly at this point to sign a wide receiver. And it would just make me sad if they did at this point. Like, I know they need to, you need to spend a certain amount of your cap. So if they had money to spend and then they decided to just blow it all on Terrell, I don't know how I'd handle that. But Brian, why don't you talk about Vance McDonald for a second?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to get an uptick in targets for sure. I mean, Brown gone, James gone. You know, you have a second-year wide receiver in Washington stepping in there. You know, Ben Roethlisberger throws to his tight ends. He does. He throws to everybody on the team. But he throws to his tight ends, you know. And
especially
I think
when you throw the ball 650 times in a season.
Yeah, the biggest – here's the thing about McDonald. I mean, the guy is a good tight end. He's a good tight end. He just can't stay healthy. If he can stay healthy for a full season and not be nicked up, I think he's, I mean, he's a lot. I value him a lot higher. You know, he's obviously not in that elite tier. I mean, you have those top three. Then you have the young guys, right? Njoku and Howard and Evan Engram and those guys. But he's there in that next four guys, maybe for me, three, four guys. I mean, he's going to be a tight end one if we're talking about a top 12, probably. I think he can do that. I don't see any reason he can't do that in that offense, especially given the weaponry that they have lost this offseason. So yeah, I mean, I'm all aboard the, and plus, I mean, how do you not love a guy that just like ends people's careers with stiff arms?
Points per stiff arm league, not straight addict.
So, yeah, I like McDonald. I think he's a good buy opportunity.
Yeah,
or
I think
a good sell opportunity too, though. Yeah. You know, on the flip side of that, right now, because there's going to be people now that are like, "Oh yeah, you know, he's going to get all this volume." So,
yeah, I think everything that happened. Yeah, everything boosted him to that first, hey, what is your late-round tight end flyer? I think Vance is probably the first guy I'll say now when it used to be Herndon, and that got ruined. So what that means in value, I still don't tight end premium trade addicts leagues. I mean, I would probably send mid-second for him, right?
Yep.
I think also a thing to realize with tight ends is that the tight end prime is not what we think in Dynasty. The tight end prime is usually starts around age 28 and goes to 31, 32. So you could find an argument where Vance McDonald is just entering his prime. And to me, the move is to take players that are a bit, maybe a tier higher, like the Chris Herndons or the Ian Thomases or Dallas Goddards, and try to turn them into a premium piece plus Vance McDonald. And you may get better production and get the piece on top of it. So I definitely think I like him more in the short term than any of those guys. And I think you can definitely get a nice piece on top of them. So that might be a pivot move that you can make if you're a contender.
You're smart. I like you. Speaking of smart, pivoting to not smart, Rob now posts in the group chat, if Vance stays healthy, he'll score more fantasy points than Njoku and OJ Howard. Don't at me. No. At Rob Twitter, at him. I don't care what he says. That's crazy talk.
Yeah, no, I'm not feeling that one, buddy.
Nope. Okay, so wow, your name is Scott. Completely blanked on your name for a second. Didn't know what to call you. You came in with a couple of topics to talk about. Let's jump into one of them. Well, first, Brian, give us the main event.
Here's the main event.
Rock and roll. All right, you came with three. Pick one, and we'll talk about it.
Well, I think we've kind of already covered the Superflex. I was planning on talking about how do you handle the bottom-end quarterbacks in Superflex leagues, because there's always that decision you have to wrestle with of, do I want to have this player as my, you know, emergency third quarterback, or do I want to try to flip them? We already kind of talked about that with Foles and Keenum. So I think the one thing that I don't think gets enough attention is when it comes to at least startup draft strategy, or at least if you're a team that is looking to maybe build your roster at this point of year, looking towards the future for the next couple draft classes, how you're going to approach that. So that was my topic that I've seen people just not really having a plan when they're doing startup drafts specifically. I've had a lot of people come to me in our Dynasty Command Center Slack chat seeking startup draft strategy help, because this seemed to be the startup time of the year. And I think the most important thing is kind of determining where you want to go with these picks instead of just taking, you know, a player that you like, actually building your roster around a strategy. And especially if you have rookie picks in the startup draft. So that's kind of the topic I wanted to bring to the table and just see how you guys approach. I'm sure both of you have either done a startup or planning on doing one here shortly. How did you approach it from a standpoint of building your team, knowing what may be coming in future draft classes or knowing what's in this rookie draft, and how to approach that versus, you know, when do you pick the rookie picks versus when do you pick the players that are in the startup itself?
All right. So you put 2020/2021. I'm going to stick with 2020. I just got my first Devy League going, and I am not into it enough to know who the hell's coming in 2021 yet. But we know that 2020 is filled with running backs and quarterbacks. Yep. So what I have been doing is, you know, I have actually thought about this. I just did 3 startups, 2 Trade Addicts. One is the Comic Do-Gooders Alliance, 2, which is Best Ball Dynasty. That's the one where I really went in with a strategy. The Trade Addicts ones, honestly, if someone sent me a trade, I just clicked yes just because it was fun. So there wasn't much strategy in those. But with the Do-Gooders, what I did was I went 2 quarterbacks early and then wide receivers galore while trading back the entire time. I have 6 2021s because what I'm doing in that league is I have, I don't remember the 2 quarterbacks. It's one of them's Deshaun Watson because I've been getting him everywhere, but I have 2 young quarterbacks and Phillip Rivers, and then no real starting running backs and some very good wide receivers and tight ends. Because what's going to happen is at the end of next year, I'm getting me a Tua or a Fromm or getting someone who's going to slot into where Phillip Rivers was. I could sell him for somewhere nice and cheap if I want to, and then use the rest of those to build my running back stable up when my wide receivers are another year closer to their prime, because, you know, I'm buying people of the 25-year-old age. So everything that was, Mr. Superflex dude. Anybody else? This FF Statistics pod last week, he kept singing that the entire damn show, and I've been singing it ever since. So damn you, John Hogue. You know, he's the one that always talks about building your roster so everyone sort of like fits at the right place at the right time. And like, that's the one league where I actually took that one to heart, and I really went through, and that's the first time in all of my years of startups where I actually used rookie picks in my strategy, because usually I just sell to get players then and now. But knowing the baller running backs and quarterbacks that are coming, I use that to my advantage, along with the strategy everybody has at this point of trading back as much as you can to get as many. I really do think it's 6 2021s, a lot of very good wide receivers, 1 at least very good quarterback, 1 pretty good quarterback, and an old guy. And then that 2020 class is just going to make my team baller. So you guys watch out, Comic Do-Gooders Alliance 2. I don't care that it's a charity league. Take me down. Take me seriously.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because that's kind of what drove this question. Is I've been thinking a lot at just looking at how valuable the running backs are in Dynasty right now. And then kind of looking at where that tier break is going to be of the players that are potentially, you know, barring injury, where that tier break is going to be for running backs next year that could potentially be just flat out replaced by these rookies that come in. So I think your top 10 or so are safe. And then also your, you know, Le'Veon Bell's, David Johnson's, the ones that are going to be signing significant contracts. And then anybody that's on a rookie contract is probably fairly safe. But then you start getting into some of the guys that could potentially be only one more year of not having to fend off somebody for their job. So like your Aaron Jones, Marlon Mack, Derrick Henry, Devontae Freeman, kind of that tier of players, Jerick McKinnon, that kind of tier of running backs are really what I'm trying to avoid right now in startups. And I would much rather pass on those players for either, you know, 2019 draft picks that are in the startup draft. And we're also, like you said, just trading back on those picks and trying to get 2021st and then backfill my roster with some of the, you know, backup handcuff running backs later. And then just hopefully I can manage it week to week during the season. So that's kind of what drove this conversation, was anticipating a year early when some of these running backs may be on the chopping block for their roles next year.
Yeah, and I know you brought this up for startups, but it also really works in rebuilds also. You know, you never really want to trust rookie wide receivers. No, or it depends. Okay, let's just say this depends how depends on how patient you really are. It is not one of my virtues. I have one or two rebuilds, with what I've been doing is selling all of my 19 picks for established wide receivers and bottling's horribly the wrong word, gathering up 2020 picks so I can use that. I'll suffer through next year, and then at the end of the year, I'm going to fill again, use that to fill my running back void, and that's how the team's going to come together. Don't spend money. You should never really spend capital on running backs when you're rebuilding anyway, but this is the perfect way. Don't just build through the draft. Years like this, if you want to compete sooner rather than later, because don't get me wrong, it is, if you can afford it, it's fun as hell to just build through the draft. You know, get as many picks as you possible. There's a lot of these wide receivers that are going to be fantasy relevant this year. But I know Stefon Diggs is going to be fantasy relevant. I know that. So trading a few picks for Stefon Diggs right now is the move I do every single time. And I've done it at least on one team this year that I could think of off the top of my head. Him specifically. So that's another move I've been doing, is selling all of the picks from this year for established players while holding on to my 2020 picks to use them to fill the cracks at quarterback and running back that are still going to be glaring because my teams are going to be bad. Brian, yeah, Venka.
No, I was going to say, I like the idea of, in a startup, always erring on, especially if you're doing a startup in the next, you know, couple weeks or whatnot, is getting as many rookie picks as you can right now. Even if there's a player that maybe you would say, you know, the 206 is on the board, but I would probably trade the 206 for that player. By taking the pick now, you basically buy yourself a couple months worth of value where it can't be impacted by a signing or a draft landing spot. You basically buy yourself free time where you can store that asset without a cost. And then the second move with that is you may end up leaving a startup draft without even a complete roster, but then you have, you know, 10 or 11 rookie picks, trying to flip those picks during the draft for extra, you know, 2020 seconds or third round picks. Those are the picks that, if you do find yourself competing during the season, you can use those picks to try to buy the 1 year wonder at running back. You know, throw a third round pick for Marshawn Lynch if he's producing week to week. And it's just a way where basically you acquired Lynch for a third rounder, but really it was a free third rounder that you got during the draft because you had so many rookie picks and you had so much capital that you can move around.
Ron, good. No, Brian, strategy with rookie picks?
Buddy, you're freezing up, Russ.
You're freezing up. Don't put this on me. My Wi-Fi thing says it's full.
I'm pretty sure it's in and out and fuzzy.
Am I in and out and fuzzy to you?
Yeah, it's a little bit fuzzy. It's a little in and out, but I guess we can decipher.
I'm going to call my internet service provider. This is a load of crap.
Good. Two weeks. This is 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, last week wasn't really all that bad. I barely edited anything out. Actually, a lot. I think I edited out where you told me to edit out, and I left the rest.
Yeah,
can you understand what I'm saying?
Not. I mean, it's skipping like every third word.
I can hear Brian fine. No skipping on Brian's end.
Right. And I can hear Scott.
Stay out of this.
So give me something, Russ. Talk to me.
All right. I switched Wi-Fis.
Is that better? Yeah, it seems better.
Better, yeah.
Yep.
You'll be surprised how little of this I'm editing out. All right, so as I was saying, Brian, do you have any opinions on using rookie draft picks in startup strategies?
Yeah, so I mean, I think I mentioned last week we talked about how, you know, we were, or maybe it wasn't last week. I guess it was on Goat District when we were talking about the startups, the Trade Addicts 5 and 6 startups, and how I tend to find myself at the end of a lot of my drafts with very few rookie picks. And I think, you know, for me, I think that is definitely an area of weakness for me. I think it's an area where I need to improve on. You know, I don't do as good of a job in startups. You know, I do a lot better if the rookies are actually included in the startup as opposed to just a placeholder for a pick. So for me, that's an area where I need to improve for sure. I definitely don't end up with as many rookie picks as I would like to have rookies on my teams in startup drafts. So I think it's a great strategy. I think what, you know, what Scott's talking about in terms of having the extra capital and then being able to turn that into, you know, future capital as well, I think is brilliant. I mean, that's super smart. You know, rookie picks almost always gain value.
At worst case, they keep.
Right. And that's exactly right. At worst case, they keep the value that they have. So, you know, I think that's a great idea. It's something that I think I'm going to have to try a little bit more of and a little harder just to be aware of for myself personally. But I think it's a great idea. Great strategy.
Yeah, it's that whole patience thing that doesn't seem to be our virtue.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so we are going to hit up our other Trade Addicts trade, then we'll pop in for the other... Man, like I completely just lost my jazz having to stop before. Yeah, so we're going to hit up the last Trade Addicts trade, then we will get back to the one other topic that Scott came in with. So, Trade Addicts 5, the 112 and a 2021st for Robert Woods, since we're talking about Los Angeles Rams wide receiver. Los Angeles Rams wide receivers. Wide receivers messed me up last week. Messing me up this week. I don't like that word anymore. Someone just tell me what they think of this trade. I'm done.
Where's the 2021st? I mean, is it a contender? Is it anticipated that you're going to make the playoffs? Or where's the? Do we have any idea where the first projects to be?
Start up this year.
Okay.
So, and I don't play the guessing game anyway. In any future first, I say it's a mid.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that the 112 plus is a great buy for Robert Woods. It just depends on where that first is going to end up being. So I would probably lean the, if I had to make the trade right now, I would probably lean the 2-pick side just because I'm confident that I could maybe work my magic and turn that 112 into either a higher pick or into a receiver that can produce similar to what Robert Woods is, and then essentially would just profit the 2021st. But I can get it if that's a late 2021st, then it's more than a fair price for Woods. So I would definitely say both sides could win, but if I had to pick right now, I would take the pick side.
Mr. Haar?
Yeah, I would also take the pick side here. I think for me, the most intriguing piece in this is the 21st. You know, I think because that running back class is so like good, in my opinion, it's going to push some
hashtag analysis.
Yeah,
good.
Oh man. But yeah, I think that will push some really talented wide receivers down in the draft a little bit next year in the rookie draft. And I think those types of receivers are going to be players that are going to be able to produce kind of like, it's kind of like what Scott was saying, that 80% thing. You know, if those receivers that you will be able to get later in the round, even later in the first in the 2020 draft, I think there's a good chance that those receivers will be able to give you 70 to 80% production. And then you're getting the 112 this year too. I like Robert Woods. I mean, I'm on record as being a little bit higher on him than a lot of people are. I think his current ADP is finally, I think his ADP is finally where it should be, you know? And it took a long time to get up there, but I would lean the pick side in this particular deal. I don't think it's a bad deal per se. I just would prefer that side a little bit.
All right, so I hate both of you because, as Brian knows, I got Robert Woods.
Yeah.
So here's my thinking. That is my 2020 first round pick. Robert Woods is going to make my team better, so I'm thinking that is going to make my pick later. Also, the way I think about it is 2020 draft is a full year away. Especially if that does become a later pick, I'm probably going to buy that pick back eventually. And like you said, if I can work my magic, it's going to be at a decent price anyway. So I'm fine using future firsts to win now if it means getting a player I like, a player that I think is consistently good for a team that, you know, consistency can really help you win when it comes to especially a guy who can give you low wide receiver one consistency. So, I mean, I was all about getting Robert Woods. I tried to get him to settle for a 2020 second and that 212, the 112, and clearly that did not work. And I'm like, am I really going to let this stop me? If that's really the, you know, 112 this year and the 112 next year, I think that's an awesome price to pay for a guy who just finished wide receiver 10 and is on what still should be a great offense. So I feel good about it. So I'm only going to cry a little bit once we stop recording. That you
so you just so you just so you just called your shot because you said the 112 this year and the 112 next year. Oh, so you
yeah,
just
I'm winning.
Shot.
I am win. Yes, that's what I did. I Babe Ruth. I pointed to the stands. That's what I did. Take that, Trade Addicts 5.
Whatever allows you to sleep a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
It's gonna be the Ambien that comes after we record. Yeah, and I didn't pull the. I don't even know if we put the Robert Woods on. I think Stoops was slacking a little bit today on posting that one, but I didn't bother pulling the Twitter because they were two pretty new trades anyway. So before we head out of here, let's hit up this. Well, we talked a little bit about it, and I wanted to bring it up a lot of the times while we were talking this entire time because there's so many players that fit into what we were saying. Go, read number two, Scott.
Well, I know we messaged back and forth about this a couple of times, but essentially it's just the art of pivoting up and down in specific situations and really studying, you know, where is the ADP, really getting on Twitter and seeing where people are voting on polls and trying to get a market gauge on certain players and then determining, okay, based on those players, where do I think that I can potentially get an additional piece on top of another player that I think can produce in a similar capacity. So I think the example I gave you earlier was like Melvin Gordon is probably maybe my biggest sell in Dynasty right now, only because, you know, he's valued right up there, like running back 6, running back 7. He will be a free agent after next year. He'll be 27 when he hits free agency. So he's probably the one player that's in that tier of running backs that could potentially have a change in situation next year, especially if they opt to not pay him kind of what Le'Veon or Gurley or David Johnson got in terms of money. And I can see an argument where the Chargers won't do that. So I think just taking somebody that's my best example is taking someone like Melvin Gordon and trying to go down and acquire, say, David Johnson plus for Melvin Gordon or Dalvin Cook plus for Melvin Gordon. And you could tell yourself a story where you are actually getting the more productive player with the player you acquire and getting the piece on top of it. So it works both ways. You could also try to take Melvin Gordon and go up to Christian McCaffrey or Alvin Kamara and add something on top of it. But it's really just looking at where you can exploit the maybe ADP values or, you know, startup rank values versus what the community is thinking on players. So that's kind of the general concept of just knowing when to do that and when not to.
So I also took this in a little bit of a different way with everyone that we've been talking about. When is it worth it to trade a player for a pick? I have Antonio Callaway on a bunch of teams. Now, what's Antonio Callaway's value really? I mean, late second at this point? Like
mid second round is probably what I've been trying to get for Callaway.
Have you gotten it though?
Yeah, a couple times I've gotten
Have you?
205, 206 for Callaway.
Yeah, see, my offers have been very late seconds or multiple thirds. So with players like Callaway, players like Foles, it's a couple of people we've brought up. Instead of using them to trade straight for something else, like when someone says, you know, what do you want for Callaway? My line is, I don't really want to trade Callaway. I want to use him to upgrade someone else. I think that's a lot. This is the way I took your question, even after you explained it to me much better twice than the way I'm actually explaining it now. Sometimes it's not really worth it to sell your cell and get something for him. Use them to make your team better in a different way also. What I was doing, where this Robert Woods deal stemmed from, my first offer was 112 and Antonio Callaway for Robert Woods, which, like I always say, my first offer is never really my best. And clearly this shows that, because that isn't necessarily a great offer in the first place. And second of all, I was willing to pay more than that. And also that works in the opposite. I have Andrew Luck in a league that I'm rebuilding in. And while I understand Andrew Luck is still a pretty young quarterback, what you want to use Andrew Luck for isn't to get six guys, even though that's what his value can really get. You want to make sure you're using him to not fall too far back in the quarterback position, but build yourself at a different one. So it's really not that I don't believe in Andrew Luck. It's just that you need pieces. When you're pivoting down from someone, I think it's important not to let compilation value, you know, blind you a little bit. Four for ones shouldn't be a thing. It shouldn't take four players to equal your one. So if you're ever doing the Melvin Gordon thing that you were saying, make sure you are getting someone you think is, we keep going back to this magical arbitrary 80% number. Make sure you are getting someone that does give you a decent amount of that value. Like we always say, if you're trading a stud, get a stud back, because otherwise it leaves so much risk. And it's like one of the reasons that anyone will ever tell you they hate trade calculators is because you can make anything equal Odell Beckham Jr. if you have enough space to enter players in. So always make sure there's someone of value coming back that is close to the value of the guy you're trading away.
Yeah. I don't want to take five quarters for a dollar bill, even though five quarters is more money. It's not as ideal.
But do you guys find, so the one thing, I agree with all of this 100%. I find in my leagues typically that it's difficult to get deals done that way though. Like if I'm going from a Melvin Gordon, right, who has produced more and has more value in terms of like ADP and that type of thing than a guy like Dalvin Cook. I mean, what are you expecting on top of Dalvin Cook to go to sell Melvin Gordon? Because in my experience, it's difficult to make that deal. I mean, some people don't even want to consider something like that straight up because of the potential of a player. So where, you know, what type of value are you looking to get back in that type of deal?
So I agree with that one, but that's my example that I will say I only own one Melvin Gordon share and I haven't had the chance to make that move specifically. And probably after this show, it'll be even less of a chance that I can do it.
And you better do it tonight because I'm probably going to edit and get it out tomorrow.
But I think where this is really valuable is maybe not so much at the top tier worth of players, because I would agree with you. If I have Dalvin Cook and I particularly don't like Melvin Gordon that much, I'm really not motivated to say, I'll give you my Dalvin Cook and, you know, 201 for Melvin Gordon, because I'm thinking, okay, well, Dalvin Cook is probably closer to equal to Melvin Gordon in my eyes. And so it's not really worth for me to pay up in that scenario. Where I think this is really valuable is when you start going down a little bit into the more murkier range of players. So your low end wide receiver threes or your low end running back twos, I think you can get value. We mentioned earlier about Antonio Callaway, and then I talked about someone like Quincy Anunua or Devin Funchess. And you could potentially go down from Antonio Callaway and get one of those players plus. And are you really, what are the odds that the player you acquire is not going to produce better than Antonio Callaway? I would say it's probably closer to 50-50 It's a dart throw on which one of those players is going to produce more. So why wouldn't you just swap them out and take the side that is going to give you the extra piece? That's kind of where I think it offers a little more value. It's really tough to do with your elite players, because if you're trading elite players, typically people are going to take more bold stances on those players. So I think it's easier to do as you go down the ADP list or when you go down draft picks.
Fair enough. That's sounds good to me. I'm going to start going through ADP tonight and sending out a bunch of offers. I like that. I like that a lot. I really do. I think that's a great strategy.
All right, man. I am ready for bed. So anything before we close out? Anything that magically popped in your head? Anything you want to talk about?
No, I really like you guys' show and appreciate you having me on. It's a good time, and look forward to kind of seeing more what happens with free agency over the next couple of days. I have a feeling that it's going to get crazy the next couple of days.
Yeah, we might have to do a special edition show when Terrell Williams signs somewhere.
The gazelle. Scott, you're a fantastic guest. Thank you very much for coming on. We really appreciate it, man.
Yeah,
thanks for having me.
I'm glad I waited till after you started with Dynasty Command Center to actually finally get unlazy enough to, get you on here, because now you come with some clout.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I finally made it.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on. Like Brian said, you were awesome. I appreciate it. You are welcome back almost anytime. Almost. Let everyone know again who you are, what you do, where they can find what you do.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter. It's Charles Chill FFB. And you can also find me over at Dynasty Command Center on the Slack chat. Our volume 2 of our rookie guide is coming out here in the next couple of days to kind of see where the adjustments have come since the combine has happened. And, check us out on dynastycommandcenter.com. And if you feel adventurous, join our Slack chat and you can talk to more of me.
Yeah. And if you don't listen to the Dynasty Command Center podcast, it is fantastic. So yeah, check that out.
There'll be some episodes coming out in the next couple of weeks that I'll probably be on, and should be a good time.
Nobody cares about you. It's about Travis.
Jeez.
Yeah, come on.
That's like us, Ross. I mean, nobody cares about you.
It's all about Brian. That's what he's the brains. That's why people come here. They just Travis zone out until
yeah, he does. Well,
he's good. He's also got the hair. I was on the open bar with him once.
Yep.
He's a good looking guy. All right, this place got weird. News on our end. I already dropped all the stuff about the Patreon, patreon.com/tradeaddictspod, tradeaddictspod.storeenvy.com. Buy some awesome shirts and a coffee mug while you're at it. Otherwise, check out Brian's 2QB and Superflex rankings on dynastyleaguefootball.com. Otherwise, man, good night, Brian.
Night, Outhouse.
Night, Scott.
Good night, guys.
See you, Scott.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addicts Podcast. You can follow the pod on Twitter at Trade Addicts Pod and follow our hosts at Dynasty Outhouse and at Brian Hart. Please remember to subscribe.